thank you.
Yeah. Well, you got the game on. Which one are you watching anything right now?
I have the Everton Fulham game on, but it's halftime.
Still 1-0?
It is 1-0. It could easily be probably 3-0. Sorry, I have the dog going crazy. Let me go grab her.
All right.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Okay, I'm back now.
All right.
Got her in the room with me. Sometimes that calms her down a little bit when she hears something weird.
Yeah. It's all right. The magic of audacity, I can cut everything down.
Perfect.
Actually, I'm going to turn down my mic a little bit, I think. Can you still hear me all right?
Yeah, just fine.
All right. I'm going to cut all this extra crap out. Yeah, so it could be 3-0, you were saying.
Yeah, it's...
not bad for us.
Well, Fulham actually had a pretty nice counterattack at one point, but put a shot a little bit wide, maybe a yard or two. But Seklenberg's made a couple of nice saves, and they've had a couple just kind of go grazing by. Everton's had all the attacking possession easily.
This Chelsea-Crystal Palace game is actually not as bad as I was expecting. 2-1 right now. Pretty back and forth, actually.
Was Chelsea's defense still not actually playing any defense, or?
Not like defenses they've had in the past.
Okay.
Palace has had a lot more possession than I thought they would. I thought they were just going to get blown off, get the doors blown off. And...
Sure.
Did you see the, news from U.S. Soccer?
Are you talking about the Klinsmann extension?
I am.
I did. I saw that. Was it Thursday, a couple days ago?
Yeah. I saw a tweet. It says, with this extension, the U.S. will have had 4 head coaches from 1995 through 2018, and Mexico has had 4 since September.
That's fantastic.
Can you name the 4 coaches since 95?
For the U.S.?
Yeah.
I can do Klinsmann, Bradley, Arena. Who is the 4th? I'm trying to think here. I can't think of the 4th at all.
Yeah, I got this one. I'm going to give myself maybe a quarter credit for it. It was Steve Sampson.
Oh, okay. From Virginia.
And I thought Siggy Schmid. I had the wrong SS initials. So, I give myself a little credit, but, not correct.
So, one of the things they do on the, I don't know if you ever watched a game on Extra Time where it's not the game that's on the NBC Sports Network, but on one of the random channels DirecTV has to carry the rest of the games.
Mm-hmm.
At halftime, they just show these hilarious compilations from Premier League history. So, I remember one time it was the 10 youngest goals ever scored in the Premier League, and it was much as 16, 17-year-olds. And at halftime today, they're showing, the 10 most hilarious fights.
I assume.
It's been great. Di Canio is in it heavily.
Oh, that and that. Did they include Cantona kicking a guy in the face? Or is it just between players?
No, there was one. Well, they're not really, I wouldn't say fights, but just kind of random violence. Because there was one where the referee... went to signal a foul and didn't realize the players were running by him when he threw out his arm to point the direction, just elbowed this guy right in the face. And then a teammate came running by, reached in the referee's pocket, pulled out a red card, and gave it to the ref. It was actually really funny.
Wow, I haven't seen that clip before. I'll have to look it up. I don't know what. Do you remember any of the teams or anything that would help me with that?
I could
search?
Go back and find it. Let me see if I can find it.
I have to go through a bunch of trouble.
But yeah, it's amusing because it's just totally out of the blue. These collisions and stuff. Here you go. It was 2003 involved Robbie Savage was the player. And let's see if I can get the team. They're wearing blue, but I couldn't see if it was Chelsea or Everton or who it was. There's one where a goalie tried to do a quick restart, just tried to clobber a ball, hit his own defender right in the back, and it ricocheted into the goal.
Yeah, those are the best.
It was Newcastle, Birmingham City, 2003. Of course, Newcastle was involved in the fight, the accidental fight with the referee.
So I've been thinking, I think you're the person from the site I've met the most in person.
That would probably sound accurate. I think we probably went, what, 4 or 5 times?
Yeah, because I've seen you 2 conventions, the KC meetup 2 summers ago, and then you came to Chicago for that qualifier.
Yep.
So, yeah, 4.
Okay.
I don't think I've met anybody else more than twice.
And it's getting to be regular now. Well, not regular, but I'd say routine now that we'll just bump into people. We know each other now well enough that some of us will just kind of randomly bump into each other. Like Canicorn and I obviously went to law school together, but didn't really know each other till the very tail end of that. But, you know, we'll get together from time to time just for whatever reason. Like, for example, the summer when he called me and said they had malt cups at his office, so I walked over to get one at the end of the day.
Hey, if you can beat a free malt cup.
Oh, they were celebrating the royal birth of Joe Maurer's twins, since Maurer sponsors Kemp's. So I was amused and hungry.
Yeah. Pays to know the right people, I guess.
Exactly.
So, how long have you been hanging out at the site?
Oh, I would say, when did Kenneth start it? 04? 05?
It was I would say summer of 04.
Okay. I probably stopped by
the summer after my first year of college, and we started ours about the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'd say about 05, 06. Probably 06 is when I really started to get into it. That 06 season was just so magical, the second half of it, that you couldn't help but show up for all those game logs. And that was when I was still doing my website. But we had a lot of the same commenters were at both places.
Right.
And so it was just sort of a natural, when I started getting a little burnt out, to just transition over there and just hang out more, and there I could comment and not have to produce something new.
Great. Yeah. You were famous for your graphs. Your WPA.
Yep.
You want to explain to the new guys who would have never saw your site what you were doing with those?
It was, like all good creative stuff, it was blatantly stolen. And so I stole it from Lookout Landing, which is a Mariners site, because my roommate at the time out in D.C. was a big Mariners fan. And I would take the win probability chart from every individual Twins game that kind of tracks the ups and downs of, at one point they had a 46% chance of winning, and then it went to 72 after a homer, then they gave up a homer, and then went down to 28, that sort of thing, and then put the chart. But then I would annotate it with very kind of snarky pictures, and then I would also assign values that, a lot of them were straightforward. You ground into a double play, you're going to lose a lot of value, but it would be the same on my site as if you went to like a fan graphs or something. But I did a little bit more actual defensive stuff that was just strictly opinion. Like, they gave the guy a double, but really it should have been a single, and the second base was entirely because Shannon Stewart can't play left field, something along those lines. And then at the end of the week, I'd tally up, and at the end of each month, I'd kind of tally up and say, here's who's been valuable, here's who hasn't, that sort of thing. But mostly it was just to make kind of snarky comments about the team or the opponents and kind of come up with amusing pictures to illustrate the games.
I can't remember any, specific examples, but I do remember finding them quite amusing.
And it was the 06 season, so it's been so long that a lot of it has passed out of my head too, but I just remember, like, for example, the Seattle one, the Lookout Landing one, they had what was his name? Matt Thornton rally towel. This is right before Thornton went to the White Sox and actually turned into a pretty decent pitcher. But with the Mariners, he was a failed first-round pick who threw about 97, but had no idea where it was going, and it was straight and hittable. So every time they brought him into the game, they'd post on their site the rally towel, and it was basically when they were throwing in the towel, and it was this hilarious. It was just super insulting but funny at the same time.
Yeah, Lookout Landing has done some pretty good stuff over their run.
It definitely, it's sort of reaching the point. Twinkie Town which I have to admit I don't check all that routinely, but every time I go over there because somebody links to something, it's, you know, pretty snarky, like the thing yesterday about Terry Ryan's long-lost twin brother who's actually making these moves, signing free agents for the first time. Lookout Landing was sort of like that, you know, 5-6 years ago, because the Mariners have been that bad and frustrating for so long that they've reached that level of just complete, it's not apathy, but just, it's so easy to mock the organization from within when you really follow closely to see what's going on. And it just amused me so much just how much they just despise their own players while still maintaining a lot of passion for the team.
Yeah, my favorite thing was their wall of Raul Labaña's gifts, just not being able to play the outfield.
Yeah. Oh, I could watch those for hours. It's like mesmerizing to see somebody that incompetent, that routinely, just run around in circles chasing a baseball.
I don't know. Does the Oracle on SB Nation have a dedicated page to Abanez? If they don't, they should.
Yeah, I don't know that either. That's a good question.
I'll see if I can find that while we're chatting. What do you see coming up for the Twins this season?
You know, probably more of the same. Maybe a little bit more hope now that we're just sort of transitioning to a little bit younger. We're kind of moving on from the old guard. There's not going to be any more Morneau. But I don't see a lot of wins. I don't see 500. You know, maybe 70, 75 wins. But Sano is on the horizon. Buxton's on the horizon. So it could be interesting down the road. But I think the first couple of months are going to be fairly tedious, to say the least.
This is probably the worst stretch of the Twins since I've started being a fan. Is it as bad as the mid-90s yet, do you think?
Well, I can't really say that, speak to that objectively, because in the mid-90s I was sort of a teenager who, you know, I was going to watch the Twins regardless, and I kind of, I would think in my brain, well, if Pat Mahomes can do this, and if Scott Stachowiak can do that, you know, I can see a playoff team somehow, and I'd sort of shake it around, and I was sort of living in denial like a lot of Vikings fans are doing around here now at the start of the year when they were telling me that Christian Ponder could win a Super Bowl, all that sort of nonsense like that. That was me back in the 90s. I wasn't saying the Twins are going to win the World Series, but I could see a lot of potential because I was cherry-picking like the one good game that a player would use and say, well, he's going to do that all the time. Whoa, Fulham is almost on the board. Howard made a sprawling save, so...
Yeah, that's the one thing I can take out of today. If Fulham lose, at least Tim Howard gets a win.
Well, and Fulham has never won a single game during the Premier League at Everton, so it's not like it's a shock.
I'm pretty sure that there are a couple teams you could say that about.
They said at the opener of the telecast that this was the most one-sided matchup at a venue in the history of the Premier League in like the 23 years or 22 years or whatever. That this is the most games played ever between two teams at one site where one team has never even drawn a point.
Never even drawn a point?
I think that's what they had said. I think they were like...
It was that bad.
I think that's what I heard. I know they were winless, but I thought I heard that they had never even tied. Which is pretty amazing when you think about it, how easy it is to just kind of stumble into a tie.
I am surprised and not surprised at the same time. I figured it was bad, but... That is impressive, actually, as you said.
Well, let me ask you your thoughts on Fulham. My brother is a big Fulham fan. Sort of got into him during the Fulham America years about 4 or 5 years ago. I remember the year that they were almost relegated and Danny Murphy saved him going down on the last day and watching that with my brother. And that was when McBride was still on the team. And I think Bocanegra was hurt that day. But he's still sticking with them, but... He's very frustrated, and I don't know how much longer he's going to just say, you know what, I'm finding a new team, I just don't care, because it's not like they have the American tie-in really anymore.
Right.
Well, do you have the same thoughts, or do you think you're just sort of attached for good? Oh my goodness, Fulham just put one over the crossbar from 10 yards out with Paul Howard on the ground.
Who was it?
It was, let's see who it was, number 11, God, what's his name? I know that doesn't help, but...
I know, I was like, is that Kachaniklic, or however you pronounce his name?
I think it was, yeah. Howard made a save. Yeah, it was Kachaniklic. Howard made a save, and then he put the rebound right over when Howard was lying on the ground from 8 yards. All he had to do was tap it in the corner.
That seems to be the season in a nutshell. One half decent chance a game and they blow it. So
I did enjoy
go downhill quickly from here.
Sure. I enjoyed Berbatov's penalty from last week. That was perfect. Berbatov and Cheeky, where he just sort of turned around, lifted his arms in the air, and smirked.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a slower moving penalty.
Yeah. I think it stopped on the way.
Yeah, if the keeper hadn't left his feet, he might have had time to change and get over there.
Sure.
Which, that guy is, he can do something like that and it's awesome, but there's just not enough of that going on this year. His flick for the
First goal for the PK was incredible.
Yeah, to earn the penalty. His little side-footed one time, little spin at the end.
It was probably the second best volley of the Premier League in the last couple of weeks behind Suarez.
Yeah,
but that Suarez one was just ridiculous.
From that distance, it's. And you can see it from the side view. It's not a smooth trajectory. You didn't just lob it in there. There's a ton of dip on that ball.
Yeah,
it's still going up, and all of a sudden, just boom, takes a nosedive. But we got sidetracked.
Sorry.
No, I'm terrible about that. Fulham.
Yes.
Yeah. I started when McBride left the crew in 03 to go to Fulham. Is that 04, somewhere in there?
Sure.
And so that's when I got into the team. Stayed through the Bokenegger into the Dempsey years. And, for the longest time, I was just they had the Americans, so that's why I was rooting for them. And now I just feel like I'm too dug in to change. But I'm not super happy about how things are going. I just don't feel like I can change at this point. Unless they get relegated and then I can't watch the games.
That would make sense.
Because I know a lot of my English friends, they're Pompey fans or...
Okay.
I know a guy that's a Bristol City fan, some Hull City guys.
No, Hull Tigers now, not Hull City.
I'm too old to...
I think they officially changed it, an hour ago or something?
Yeah, much to the dismay of the supporters.
But now the new owner can change it back, and he's a hero. Whatever, they sell the team in 2 years.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's playing a long con.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those guys, they have BBC4 and whatever. They can get at least the championship, not necessarily League One as easily, but it's just so hard to follow the championship from over here that I probably would switch over to probably Everton because of Tim Howard.
Well, even in the last couple years before this year with the new NBC coverage, I sort of picked up Everton as my team about 5 years ago or so, but I'd get to see two games a year.
Yeah.
And because, they're always on that tier below Man U, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal. That's going to get the game is when ESPN had the coverage and they'd only show one or two. And sorry, I don't know if you heard my dog shaking there, but
that's ours.
But it's been just amazing that I can now, you can DVR it or I can just catch whatever I want. And now I've probably seen, 75% of the minutes they've played this season. If not live, at some point I can just go back and watch. And it's so much more accessible. And now I can, when I'd watch one or two games a year, I'd be like, who is this random guy on the wing that I've never heard of who's starting from one guy in an injury? And now it's like, oh, okay, I can follow the way you'd follow the Twins with the tactics and the injuries and the lineups and all that.
Yeah, I was in the same boat. I only got to see Fulham when they were getting pasted by Man U or something.
Sure.
So I'm so happy with NBC's coverage. I couldn't say enough nice things about it.
Yeah, it has been spectacular. And just it's kind of funny that ESPN sort of put in a lot of legwork over the years, and then now NBC is reaping the rewards. Although they've definitely built upon it, they took it to a whole new level. And hopefully Fox can do the same, although I'm very doubtful that Gus Johnson will ever turn into a competent soccer announcer.
Yeah, I gave him every benefit of the doubt, but I'm still not convinced.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. Politely skeptical.
Politely skeptical. That's the most Minnesotan thing I've ever heard out of somebody.
I didn't make that up. I'm not sure where I heard it before. It may be a band name up here for all I know. I definitely heard the phrase, and it just fits so perfectly.
When did you start? I know you've been into soccer for a long time, but how did it start?
I started playing as a kid. My father played in high school down in Omaha. And he was like, his high school was one of like six schools in the entire state of Omaha, or sorry, entire state of Nebraska, that had a soccer team in the early 70s. So it was kind of sort of rare that he was already there. And, you know, they weren't very good because there was nobody playing it at the time. But he got us signed up at a young age, and my brothers were both much better than I was. And so they actually both played in college, in D3, whereas I went to the refereeing track and kind of rose through the ranks there to become a pretty decent referee before my knees started to give out and I had to come back. But we were raised watching it. My brothers, because they played competitively, they always would have it on. If I'd ever go to my parents' house when I'd come home for college, they would have the Fox Soccer Channel on constantly. And they knew way more about the players and the teams and whatever than I did. But just through osmosis and now, like we said, have an NBC I can watch it every day. I like watching it, but I didn't like watching Man U and Chelsea and just teams beat up on each other. I wanted to see kind of more competitive games. That's what kind of drew me to a team like Everton that's always in the mix but never just gonna smoke anybody.
Yeah, one of the more interesting games I've ever seen was when we went to the World Cup qualifier in Chicago. And you had your referee's experience. You brought a new viewpoint I wasn't familiar with. I thought it was that was a really interesting.
Sure, and that was
bits you had.
That was kind of something funny. Whenever we'd watch the World Cup in '98 or '02 or whenever, or I'd watch a big game with my brothers, is that I definitely watched from the perspective of a referee. Not quite as much now. I haven't really refereed any games in the last probably now it's been almost 7-8 years. But at the time, when I was refereeing probably 4 or 5 games a week, men's league games, yeah, I went down to St. Louis for one of the U.S. ODP tournaments, Olympic development tournaments, doing like a bunch of 16, 17-year-olds who are trying to make the national team. You know, you just learn to watch it through those blinders. And so I would be kind of saying, okay, this guy's about 2 minutes away from getting a yellow card, or, you know, you got to watch this issue, or, wow, look at that pick. The guy set somebody off he's offside and makes it look like he's not involved, but he's actually involved. And it's just kind of it's one of those, to me, it was just the natural way to watch it. But to somebody who's never been in that environment, it makes perfect sense that they'd never have seen it that way before.
And you have do you find having a deeper understanding of the laws of the game? What am I trying to get at? How does that inform your watching, knowing the laws better?
I don't think it really changes it that much compared to somebody like, say, my brothers who both played. And, I mean, they reffed as kids for like a year or two and then realized it just wasn't for them. They didn't want to take not that there was a ton of abuse, but, you know, they just didn't have that mindset of wanting people yelling at them and telling them they did something wrong. But the laws of the game, if you go look at it, they're like, you know, 45 pages long in a lot of white space. It's not like we're talking about baseball rules where there's section 1.42J subdivision 3 subpart X. You know, the soccer ones are much more cut and dry. It's like, rule one, the field needs to be X yards by X yards and that sort of thing. And rule two, you got to have spikes, shin guards, a jersey, socks, the goalie has to wear something different. They're not really all that complicated. There's just a lot of gray area. And so I don't think it necessarily shaped it that much. The only thing I'd say it would do, not the laws, but the experience, would give me much more sympathy towards the referee on those 50-50 calls. Like, for example, the Fring play of Germany against the U.S. in the World Cup in 02 when the ball hit off his hand on the line and everybody's freaking out thinking it should have been a handball. And I was sort of like, well, it didn't look really intentional to me. You know, he's 2 yards away. That was a rocket right at his hand. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of refereeing intramurals in college, but hey, it was beer money, you know?
But, oh, exactly.
The abuse from that was pretty frustrating at times, just, you know, get guys that
sure
things way too seriously. It's C-League Drake intramurals, dude. Chill. Just chill.
Yep.
We're all doing the best.
Well, and there's definitely psychological components that you either pick up on your own, or when I was going to these, like when I went down to St. Louis for that ODP tournament, I worked with one of the MLS trainers. They had him working with all of us about just player management and player control, and there's just ways to sort of diffuse the situation psychologically. It helps that I'm tall. I think you might be an inch or two taller than I am, but I'm, 6'1", 6'2".
Yeah, you're not a small guy. You'd be,
and I could just get up in somebody's face. And just with my body language, I could make most people back down just by sort of, not, I don't want to say I was invading their personal space, but I could definitely make it a little bit uncomfortable. And that would help to diffuse things. It's just like, do you really want to get in a staring match with a guy who's 6 inches taller than you, who's going to be looking down on you, and who has the whistle? Mm-hmm. I don't think you want to do that. And so much of it is communication through the whistle. If you blow a wimpy whistle, if you just kind of tweet at it, they're going to look at you. But if you whistle that thing like crazy, if you're 100 yards away and you see a penalty, they say it, blow it, the whole 100 yards you're sprinting to mark it, and no one's going to doubt you because you just communicated, oh, it was so obvious, I saw it from here, and I'm going to blow it for 15 seconds. I don't know how you could possibly think they've been, even if you're not sure. Like, there's just so much communication you can do that way. And so it's one of those kind of unique, again, it's to become a sort of a little mini expert in some really obscure field. It's funny all the random tips people tell you along the way.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the things we always try to impress upon the freshman referees was, if you blow your whistle, sound like you mean it.
Helps exactly. So the worst thing you can do is be indecisive. Even if you're wrong, sell it and they will buy it.
Yeah.
But if you can't sell it, no one's going to be interested when down the road you absolutely are right, but you have no credibility.
So
I will say that I didn't ref much in college at GW with the intramurals. I just for whatever reason didn't really feel like doing it. But somebody there found out that I had this background, and they brought me in for the championship indoor game 1 year because it was GW is about 10% international student body, mm-hmm. and it was this team of students from Africa versus this team of students from South America, and they had some very contentious games in the past, and they brought me in to do it sort of blind. They didn't really tell me why. They just said, we heard you were a ref, we really need you this one day, blah 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 blah, and nothing went wrong at all. I had no idea. And then afterwards, they said that was the first game the teams had played in 4 years that didn't have a fist fight. And I was like, what?
Yeah, we won our outdoor championship junior year against the International Students Association had a team they put together because it was late October in Iowa. It was freezing. I think it was already snowing. A bunch of, I remember Nana from Ghana, his name is, that's how I remember.
Sure.
We had a couple guys from Latin Americans, and they were just freezing.
Yes.
We weren't better than them, but we were more adapted to the conditions we were playing in. I'm not going to say it wasn't cold, but
you could handle
my
it.
First winter,
Right.
I just remember guys standing at midfield with their hands down their shorts, not moving, too cold to do anything.
I definitely remember a couple high school games up here playing in the snow. Everyone flurries. Nothing like the U.S. Costa Rica game, but it stinks. But yeah, you just gotta play in it, and everybody's got the same field. And in high school, everybody's from here, so we were all miserable together, and nobody really had an advantage. I could see a non-local being especially annoyed.
I played
after all, my in-laws don't. Oh, I'm sorry. My in-laws don't. They don't visit. Lori and I, between like October and May, it's just never going to happen. Because my father-in-law grew up in New Orleans and he just doesn't like cold, and so it's like, well, all right, guess we won't see you for about 6 months unless we go down there. But on the bright side, we don't like visiting New Orleans in July either, so it sort of works out.
Yeah, I've got cousins from Tennessee, and it's been snowing here in D.C. or outside D.C. all week. And I tease them to come up and visit. And they're like, "You're crazy! I'm not going anywhere near that."
Well, I saw the snow day that one of our college friends in D.C. got on, I think it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, and there was like a flurry. There wasn't even traceable snow on the ground, and she sent us a picture of her yard, and pretty much mocking it herself. But I remember in D.C. one time it snowed, and I used to take the bus for work, and I ended up, the bus was running late, so I just said, I'll just start walking it and get on the bus when it comes by, and it never came by, and I walked to work an hour and a half in the snow. That was real fun.
Yeah, I went to work on Tuesday morning, and it usually takes me about 40 minutes to get there because of traffic. And I got there in the exact same amount of time with nobody. I was just, you know, I had to slow down to do, I did about 40, 45 because of the weather. But there was almost nobody on the road, so I got to just go. It was actually quite pleasant as far as commutes go.
It's amazing how...
Yeah, I can handle weather much better than I can handle crappy drivers.
Yes. I picked up Kelly the other day when he got to town. He's in town visiting some family. And his flight was delayed a couple hours. And in a panic, he called me, and I happened to be nearby. So I picked him up at the airport, and traffic was stopped at one... Oh, I think at Fulham just got a penalty. So...
To Fulham or against Fulham?
To Fulham.
Yes.
Gareth Barry just took out somebody on the edge, took out Kecmanovic. So probably going to be Berbatov doing something cheeky on Howard.
Man, I wish my on-demand wasn't messed up. It snowed again this morning.
It's Berbatov on Howard, so.
I'm thinking some cable box somewhere got snowed in or something. I don't know what, maybe the satellite's gone. I get sound, but no picture. It's all very,
okay.
You know, HBO, and then, you know, he didn't have the de-scrambler or whatever.
Sure. Well, Berbatov just took the exact same penalty as last week with the same result. He went slow and to the left, and Howard went to his left. So, 1-1 now.
Awesome.
This one had a little more pace on last week's, but still not particularly hit hard. And De Lufeu just pulled a hammy too, so.
Yeah, that just came up on the
Urchin's in rough shape. Well, rough, relatively speaking. They got 25 minutes to find another goal to get the 3 points.
I'm fine with the draw.
Yeah, but I'm not. This is a year that Everton could sneak into the Champions League.
And then finish 12th next year because they don't have the squad.
Keep anybody? Yeah.
Because Lukaku and De Lufeu both on loan.
And Gareth Barry.
Oh, yeah, from City, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know if that's a get-while-they're-getting-good situation, or...
I heard a rumor...
Just setting up expectations for next year to be just crushed.
Yeah, well I heard a rumor that De Lufeu's loan with Barca may have a clause in it that says that they would renew it for next year, too. Like that they would have the option. So he may be able to return. Because, you know, if he goes back to Barca, that'd be fine. They're great and everything. But where's he going to play? They still have
he's to... not getting in that squad.
Exactly. And so, I mean, obviously that's why they loan him out. But they're so appreciative of the way that Martinez has worked him into the rotation here. Mm-hmm. That it sounded like they were going to just say, let's do it another year. But, that's a rumor. I have no actual proof of that anywhere. It's probably just wild speculation and hope.
Yeah. What is the transfer window good for if not wild speculation? Right?
Exactly. Well, this isn't even for the January window. This is for next year.
You got to get... It's like you know how they start putting Christmas decorations up before Thanksgiving. Things just creep in earlier and earlier every year.
Well, and the January window, they still keep talking about how Moyes is going to try to get Leighton Baines. Mm-hmm. And, well, he's been hurt the last 3 weeks, and Oviedo, his replacement, has been doing just fine. And I don't think Leighton Baines is the answer for the problem that are plaguing Man United right now, although their entire defense is 75 years old and slower than Berbatov's penalty shots.
It might be a good opportunity for Everton to make a little money.
Yep. Well, and they do have the money they got from Fellaini to use in the transfers, so they've got some dough lying around.
Do you approve of their transfer strategy, their reluctance to spend money they don't have, as opposed to
going wildly in debt?
Yeah.
Obviously, I'd like them to spend more and do more, but it works. It's been working for 15 years that they spend no money and they keep finding. Well, I think like Steven Pinheiro is like a great, hilarious example of, you know, they bring him in for nothing, sell him to Spurs for a whole bunch of money, and then bring him back from Spurs when he can never break into their lineup for, you know, an eighth of what they sold him for.
Right.
And they definitely, it works. Whatever they're doing seems to be working, so it's hard to criticize too much. It'd be nice to go out and actually get a stud, but as long as teams are going to keep letting them have players on loan that don't quite fit other plans, but Everton can see the use for them. And then their development academy just keeps churning out incredible guys. Barkley, obviously, now is the latest, but going back to, you know, the years past with Rooney and all those guys, they keep finding people, so it's working somehow.
Well, I think we've lost half of our audience talking about soccer so much.
Probably.
Talk a little baseball, I guess.
Sure.
So the new offseason signings, we were talking about the Terry, Jerry, Ryan twins. Is this, it seems out of character. What do you think about them?
I think they were, I don't know what to expect with the two pitchers. They were needed. Last winter, the stupidest thing they did was not bring in anybody besides Kevin Correa and then look with a straight face and say their pitching is going to be improved when they had the worst starting pitching in the league and they went out and brought in another fifth starter. So Hughes is sort of a wild card, obviously, because he really struggled last year, but we shall see. He's got the potential, but if he might get Rick Anderson and turn into a pitch-to-contact sort of guy and take away all of his actual advantages with his 95-mile-per-hour fastball and everything. Nolasco is one of those guys, I haven't really watched him pitch all that much in his career since he was sort of stranded with the Marlins for the most part. But, you know, he's definitely an improvement. He's not an ace, but he's an improvement, and improving is what they needed to do. It's just so painful to watch these games where they're losing 4-1 every game in the fourth inning, every single time. And to have, you know, 3 months in the season, the guy who's leading your team at strikeouts is your closer who's thrown 35 innings. It's just not right. It just cannot be sustainable as a way to keep fans interested at all. I will say it's been pretty funny talking to like family and friends who are sort of casual Twins fans that the signing that's gotten the most chatter is the Kubel signing from yesterday, as if he has any way of making an impact with the current roster setup. But, you know, hang your hat on something.
Yeah, I just looked up the Twins transactions for this offseason. I didn't realize they signed Jason Bartlett to a minor league deal, too.
That was like a month or two ago. And
I missed it.
That's after him not playing last year and the year before having a... Never turns up 2-1. Sorry.
It's all right. Thanks for the...
Jameis Coleman on a Pinheiro cross went about 6 yards on the ground, and Lukaku and a bunch of people ran by it, and Coleman cleaned up the mess.
Neither one of them are on my fantasy team, because I've got Phil Jagielka and Pinar.
Pinar got the assist, so he's got two assists now.
I misheard you, yeah. All right, well, I got an assist out of the deal.
You got two of them today.
Yeah.
Lukaku's my captain, so of course he's not going to score.
I have had the worst luck with Lukaku. I bought him at the beginning of the season, think he finished last year so well.
Yep. They didn't play for a month.
Didn't get into the Chelsea squad, so I sold him. Then he gets loaned out to Everton and goes crazy, so I buy him. Then he goes on a dead streak again. I'm just... Whatever I do with Lukaku, somebody else should do the opposite, and they'll be sorted. Like I'm Costanza.
Yeah.
I ended up selling him and Giroud to get the money for Sergio Aguero.
He got hurt today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Didn't look like it was too serious.
Hopefully he's out maybe a week. He's valuable enough. I don't mind hanging on to him while he's hurt. But then I had to sell Sturge and somebody else, and I got Suarez when Sturge got hurt.
Sure.
So, but now my bench is getting pretty thin because I have so much money tied up in two strikers.
I had, we got back on soccer talk, but yeah. for about 3 weeks here, I just kept with the Thanksgiving, and then they had the Wednesday week and all that. Kept forgetting to switch my squad, and I had like 6 injured players, and so I was getting zeros from a couple starting spots just because I hadn't really. I kept saying, "Oh, I'll do it before the Sunday games," and then it'd be a random Wednesday game or something. It's just like, ah, shoot. But oh well. I'm not expecting much from Jason Bartlett though to get back on the Twins to Hawk.
Am I wrong in remembering? But wasn't Phil Hughes one of the targets of the Santana proposals?
He was, yeah. It was supposed to be, I think, Hughes, Melky, Cabrera, and like Ian Kennedy is what they claim the Twins were asking for.
So it's kind of crazy how he ends up on the Twins all these years later.
Yeah, but and I didn't realize he was so terrible last year. I thought it shows you how little I pay attention to the Yankees. But you know, to see that he was like 5-14 or something with a 5+ ERA, I had no idea. But you know what? That's actually not that bad with some of the Twins pitchers.
Slide right in.
Yeah.
Just bump, Goldmouth just scramble. Oh, and Chelsea clears. Palace almost put one in there.
Oh, that'd be. Is it at Chelsea?
Yeah, it's at Stamford Bridge.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah, they would have tied it at 2, but just as they couldn't. Let's see what happens. A nice little layoff. Oh, it gets past check, but is that Ivanovich who saves it off the line? And then 5 or 6 people take a hack at it before it finally gets cleared out.
Sure.
But that was good tracking back by, I think, Ivanovich. I couldn't tell. But, yeah, so Phil Hughes is on the Twins all these years later, but I had no idea how bad he was last year. 4-14, 5.19 ERA.
Yikes.
120 strikeouts and 145 innings. 121 strikeouts.
Oh, they'll change that. They won't let him do that again.
42 walks. That's just the CBS Sports. I got through the transactions. I didn't go to BR. So I don't know about
everybody keeps hanging their hat on. He's a fly ball pitcher, and so he gave too many home runs in Yankee Stadium, and so that's going to totally change things. But, you know, who knows? I'm okay with it. It's the fact that they gave him a 3-year deal seems a little bit strange, coming off of a terrible year. But maybe he just had a downer and he's going to be back for 3 years and be great and they have a bargain. But
yeah, well, it's like Jeff said regarding Hendricks, sometimes that change might just be the thing that someone needs.
Yeah, definitely.
It's worth a shot. Yeah, I'm with you. It's worth a shot. What's the worst that happened? They lose 65 or only win 65 again?
The talking point that just slays me, though, and it applies to Willingham more than Hughes, but it could apply to Hughes on the road if he actually pans out, was, you know, they signed Willingham to this big 3-year deal. Not even big. Well, Terry Ryan, big money, but $21 million for 3 years, not really all that important, impressive. And he has a great first year, and then teams are interested in trading for him, and everybody said, we can't trade him. Nobody ever signed with the Twins again. It's just such a preposterously stupid statement. That players are going to sign when teams offer them a bunch of money. They don't care if they get traded. I mean, it doesn't stop the Red Sox. They'll sign. I think they had like a stretch for 4 or 5 years where they signed 5 different shortstops to $40+ million deals and traded them after a year because it didn't pan out with Edgar Renteria and Julio Lugo and all those guys. Teams are going to sign with you if you pay them, and so I just don't even understand how that got to be this giant talking point about. No one's ever going to sign with the Twins again if they do this. It made no sense.
And that's the kind of thing I avoid most sports radio and comment sections for.
Well, I don't know. It was creeping in somewhere because I don't ever listen to that either, and I'm still hearing it over and over. So I don't know where it was coming from. Because I'm with you. It's the sports talk stuff is just unlistenable 98% of the time.
Yeah, I think some guys were commenting about the comments that it was ridiculous. It was getting a little meta, I think. Comment on
sure.
it. comment, but yeah, I tend to, even in like the cup of coffee, I'll just skip that, you know, discussion about discussing. I'm like, well, I'll skip this whole big gray block here. It's not going to be.
Sure.
Which, you know, some people like it. They want to talk about it. That's fine.
You know, oh, yeah.
No skin off my teeth.
Exactly. But it drives me crazy from time to time. It was like this panic, this paranoia about how it's going to cost the Twins forever. And it's like, what are you what? Where is this coming from? It hasn't stopped any sports team in the 40 years there's been free agency in sports. Nobody's been affected by trading a player away.
Yeah. What about the minors? Who are you more excited for, Buxton or Sano?
That's a good question. I haven't seen much of either of them. I would say Buxton seems like the more exciting player and the one I'd more enjoy watching because there's just something really fun about watching a great defensive outfielder who just sort of glides around. But Sano seems more interesting to me because he's the sort of player that does not get along with the Twins because he's, you know, got an independent thought. And so I think it might be kind of more interesting to observe him trying to fit in when the Twins are trying to stifle his personality. You know, God forbid the Twins ever get a member of the coaching staff who's actually from the Caribbean, as opposed to like a Spanish speaking guy from Texas. And the Twins just don't seem like the most accommodating franchise to people like Sano, who I don't say he has like special needs, but it's like he's coming from the Dominican into Minnesota. It's a little bit of a culture shock. Right. You're gonna have to make some help him transition, and it just doesn't seem like it's ever done.
And not just him, you know, there's plenty of players who could probably use a little, you know, something to
sure.
make them more comfortable.
Well, I remember when Christian Guzman first joined the team in the late 90s, I think he was 20 his first year. He was very young, didn't speak a word of English, and they had him live with LaTroy Hawkins for the season. And, you know, that made sense, and it helped him bring in. And so I'm not saying they don't do anything, but there's just nobody that seems to really – nobody's been through this and can kind of talk to him from the end game perspective. He can talk to other teammates and hear that, but there's nobody that can tell him from a coaching staff or, you know, a 45-year-old grizzled old vet. His experience isn't going to be the same as what Tony Oliva went through in 1962. And sure, Tony Oliva's great and he's an ambassador and he's always around, but, you know, they don't have that much in common. And I just fear that the Twins just have not – They don't take the steps to really, I don't know what the word is, just integrate these people and make them feel welcome instead. And the first time he does something where he kind of showboats after home run, what are they going to do, bench him for a week again and put him in the doghouse? Like, let people be. Like, let them be themselves. It just drives me nuts. So for that reason, I think he might be way more fun because it could just be a total chaos and kind of a disaster of clash of personalities. And I like chaos. For anybody who's ever played any of Kelly's Survivor games, I'm the one that always just sort of plays like a lunatic and just causes chaos for the sake of doing it for fun.
Yeah, I like it on other teams. I don't necessarily watching the Twins, you know, give themselves
problems. One of my favorite Twins from the last, I guess it's kind of scary to say, it came in the last 10 years anymore, but I always loved, and every time I went to a game the last 10 years when he came back as a White Sox, I loved A.J. Pierzynski because the Twins have never had a guy with that attitude since he left of just, you know, it's screw it, I'm being myself and deal with it. And
he's an asshole, but he's our asshole.
Right. Well, and if you go back and watch game one of the 2002 ALDS against Oakland in the first inning, the Twins made like two errors and they just looked like a little league team, a bunch of clowns. And on the last, and I think Oakland scored four or five runs. And on the last one, Eric Chavez was scoring a run, just trotting in from third on a hit to the outfield. There's not going to be a play. And Pierzynski sort of put his head down and accidentally walked right into Chavez and gave him a shoulder right when he crossed the plate. Basically saying, you know what, we may look like a bunch of idiots, but we're not backing down. And that kind of got in everybody's head. And it set the tone. They have had nobody since who's just a little bit cocky and obnoxious.
Yeah. Back to soccer for 2 seconds. Demba Ba is on for Chelsea. Game's over.
And Gareth Barry just scored for Everton on an assist from Lukaku.
3-1 then?
3-1. This was off a corner. I think it's been like 14 corners to 1 for Everton.
Well, that would follow, since I assume Fulham hasn't had much in the attack.
No.
Yeah. Uh-oh. There's 3 people 3-1 goal for Chelsea, and they f***ed it up. I'm going to have to bleep that. They did. The defender... Two guys went into the challenge. They took each other out. The ball went flying right to Ramirez. Not a bad touch, but the ball's bouncing on him, and he just kind of whips it right into softly into the keeper. He had 2 guys on his right. He could have laid it off for either if he could have got a good... Chelsea, Schadenfreude is the best Schadenfreude.
Oh, yes. I could watch clips of John Terry falling down on shooting penalty shots for probably forever. John Terry on one screen and Raul Banias playing defense on the other, and I'd be a happy man.
There's some sort of... I need to collect all those and make them a... Some sort of... Actually, we need our own GIF oracle on the site.
We do. That's true.
John Terry crying is entry number 1. Anyway, Przinski?
Yes.
I like those kind of guys that, you know, give a little something extra, a little different.
The only downside is that 20 years from now, they try to get Dan Gladden into the Twins Hall of Fame because he was a crusty old bastard. That's the biggest downside I can see. It's like, oh, Gladden. Well, because Gladden once went and got in a fist fight with Steve Lombardozzi, the second baseman, in their front yard during the playoffs because Lombardozzi didn't care enough. You know, stupid stuff like that. And it's like, well, that shows you how much he cares. So let's put him in the Hall of Fame when he's just a grossly inferior player to numerous other candidates.
Yeah. I don't have those memories of the guys that are up for the Twins Hall. I don't have opinions on it. I probably won't have opinions for another 10 years on the candidates.
Sure.
Until guys like Christian Guzman or something's up for consideration.
At some point, though, you can't, at least to me, and I'm not a small hall guy for the Baseball Hall of Fame in general, but for the Twins Hall, you can't just keep putting in people forever and ever and ever. At some point, there's, like, diminishing returns, and it's you're honoring anybody you ever played. I think they're starting to creep into that territory. Knobloch is a no-brainer and should be in.
Sorry, but the Palace keeper just took one off the face. I guess it's more shoulder than face. The other angle made it look a little more... Because it's a really nice through ball, and he has about a yard to react.
Okay.
From the sideline, it looks like it was straight to the face, but from high on the goal, you could see it was a little lower, a little shoulder. But for a second there, I thought he just took one square off the forehead.
I played goalie once in a tournament. Our regular goalie couldn't make it and got a couple of those shots. They don't feel very good.
I played floor hockey goalie in intramurals. Just because somebody had to. And
sure.
You get a mask and a chest protector and shin guards, it's fine. Had no problem with it. I actually really liked it. So we go to soccer. Hey, you're our hockey goalie. Go play soccer goalie. All right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's as sound a reason as any. The first time somebody wound up and ripped one at my head from about 6 yards out, I just ducked and let it in. I said, somebody else is going to have to do this. So we put our basketball player.
The big guy?
He's actually just about my size, height and weight-wise, but he's never played soccer before, and he's got great hands. So we're like,
makes sense.
Well, he was out in the field at one point. He took a swipe at a ball that went over his head. It's like, dude, you can't do that. Wrong sport entirely. Why don't you actually come back here and be goalie? That sounds like a better idea. And he actually did really well. It was all down to my tactical acumen.
And I wonder about that with it seems like the American goalkeepers in general make up a disproportionate number of like Premier League goalies and that. And I wonder if it's because, you know, if you grow up in England or Spain or whatever, and you're playing soccer, odds are you're a field player and you're doing this and that. But if you grew up in the U.S., you probably played basketball for a little bit at some point when you were 7, 8, whatever, built those hand-eye coordination. So because I was wondering about, you know, Friedel's still playing over there, obviously not starting, but he's like 80 years old, and Howard Guzan, the goalie on, can't think of his name. There's another one that I'm thinking of. He's actually from Minnesota. And who's he playing for? Stoke or somebody?
Not ringing a bell.
He's young. He's like 18, 19.
Oh.
But he just got called up. The goalie from Poland who's injured, I can't think of who that is, but he's backing him up now.
Roots?
Yes.
Roots?
Whatever team that is. Is that Southampton?
Yeah.
Okay. So now their second stringer is an American from, I think he was born in Atlanta, but he lived in the Twin Cities until he was about 17. Then he went over to join some English academy and all that. And he's 19 or 20 now. But I always wonder why are Americans so disproportionately creating these like pretty world-class goalkeepers compared to, you know, God forbid we ever create a left winger or a left back. Because yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo running at DeMarcus Beasley is probably the most terrifying thought of my life.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Cody Cropper.
That's the guy, yep.
Yep. When I was working at the rink last year in Buffalo, they had summer leagues and stuff for the kids. And I was talking to one of the dads. He said, oh, my kid doesn't play summer hockey. He plays lacrosse and baseball. Because he read a book at some point that said, oh, overtraining on one sport, you know, you don't develop other sets of muscles, other
sure
balances and stuff. Playing two or three different sports will give you, you know, cross training essentially.
Okay.
And, you know, getting to your point about goalies, you know, unless an Englishman is splitting time between rugby and soccer, he's never going to really get his hands into the deal.
Yep.
So, you know, if someone grows up playing basketball or even baseball, where you've got to use your hands some, it's going to be, maybe that might contribute to the goalie pool.
Okay. Yeah, it's just a thought that I've had that I don't have any real interest in pursuing the sociology of it, but it's just something that's like, you know, there's gotta be a reason that
there's a nice little pop theory.
These Americans just go over there and actually can hold their own and goal really, really well, but we can't produce players at other positions that are anywhere near a world class level.
And it might just be like some sort of selection bias too.
That's true.
Yeah, but like you said, I'm not interested in putting in a request for funding to do the research.
Let's have Brian take care of that one.
Yeah, BS when you hear this, go, you know, see what you can dig up for us, if you wouldn't mind.
Please do, Professor.
Right. Anything else you want to hit before we call it a day? We've been going for, I don't know, about an hour now, minus dog attending issues.
Yeah, nothing's coming to mind. I'd love to do it again sometime, and I apologize for all the delays I had setting it up. But
that's all right.
I have many things to talk about. I am a man of many words.
Yeah.
Not as many as Novak, though. That guy could talk to a wall for a day and a half.
Yeah, well, don't worry about the issues. Half-baked, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it wouldn't be WGOM if something went right.
No. Did you listen to the CH episode?
I've caught snippets, but I was actually planning on listening to it today. Actually in trial all week.
Been pretty busy. That's why
I've been sort of tied down.
A commute or something you were listening
to. So the thing about trial is, and I work for the judge, so I'm not actually on either side.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like I'm putting in crazy hours. I mean, but it pushes everything else back, so from, you know, 9 to 4:30, it's all trial all the time because we don't want to waste the jury's time. But then after that, we have to sneak in everything else we had to get through to the rest of the day. And so we're just piling stuff on at the end of the day. And it just sort of pushes everything back. And some days in trial, there's, you know, a 1 hour argument about something that you didn't expect. And some days you just get out of it right away. So it's sort of hit or miss.
Looks like a little bit of handbags in the Tyne Wear Derby. Oh, no, that's Southampton, not Sunderland. I don't know what I'm thinking. Anyway, like you said earlier, Newcastle's involved in some violence.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, the half-bakedness. I don't know if I just had to, if I listened to it so many times or what, but the audio on that just seemed like you could barely hear him at some point because I had to jack up the volume so much it was getting distorted. But hopefully I got this new app and we're recording on different channels, so.
Okay.
If you're a little soft, I can just put the right speaker up a little bit instead of having to, like, cut and paste and run.
The first podcast I recorded with Kelly, I did through Skype but on my phone, and it just did not – it's not as good as you'd hope. Mm. And so it sounded like I was standing inside of, like, a jet runway or something.
Yeah, that's with CH, I kind of got a little bit of an echo chamber going on because I ran the tutorial from Audacity how to raise voices that you can't hear, and it just made all the noise, like it's like a wall behind it, it seemed like. But yeah, well, you know, we'll get the kinks ironed out here eventually.
Yeah, well, I'd love to come back again, or maybe I could turn the tables and we do like an interview view or something. Not that this was an interview as opposed to just a rambling conversation.
Yeah, I don't know if this counts as a better know a will. It was kind of just us BSing about soccer.
Yeah.
But it was, hey, hopefully people will enjoy listening to it.
And yeah, we have to throw out a lot of options and just see what gets the ratings.
Yep. Well, and if they don't like it, they don't have to listen.
Exactly.
So yeah, we'll get you and CH and me together. I'm really looking forward to this history roundtable. I know you're big into history, and obviously he's doing his grad work in it.
Yeah, that sounds exciting and interesting, but I feel like I'm going to be just totally overwhelmed and in over my head. But it sounds great.
We'll pick a topic, and we can all go read the Wikipedia page on it real quick so we don't sound too dumb.
There we go.
Because I remember you wrote that really nice article about the GM, and was that when McPhail came in?
Oh, yeah, but the 86, end of the 86 season, they brought in McPhail, and then they were trying to find a manager to replace Ray Miller, and they had their top candidates were Joe Torre, Jim Frey, and Tom Kelly, and then, of course, Sid Hartman was pushing and pushing and pushing for a return of Billy Martin. And they settled on Tom Kelly, the least glamorous name at the time, because, you know, he had been the interim manager, managed 30 games at the end of the 86 season. But you're talking about Joe Torre, who at the time he wasn't the guy, four-time World Series champion, but he had managed, the Braves to the playoffs a couple times. And Jim Frey had just managed, the Royals or the Phillies or somebody to the playoffs. And then Kelly hadn't done anything. But they settled on him, and they brought in Annie McPhail, and he was, 31 years old to run the team. And nobody seemed happy about it, but it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a discussion on that level, you'll fit in fine. I think you.
Perfect.
And I know you read a lot of history works. You went on your little Russian history tear lately, right?
Russian history and, only two. I read biography of Peter the Great and a biography of Catherine the Great. Those are the history, but then a lot of literature. So I've been reading Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and stuff.
And obviously, Will's really big. The other Will, CH, yep. Is really big into Russia and
sure.
History and literature both. So I don't know much, but we can start there. Maybe it's an idea.
It'll work. It always does.
Always does. I read the. City of Thieves. It was in English, but it was about Russia, so I got that to contribute.
There you go.
But so until we can all get together again, it was nice talking to you, and looking forward to the next one.
And it was great to talk to you.
All right, and Thanks to everybody for listening, putting up with our rambles. But hopefully we'll you found it enjoyable and you'll tune in next time. And for now, I'm signing off. So take care. WGOM Radio is a production of WGOM.org. Our theme song is titled Bruce Lee by Doran Deutsch. It's used under a Creative Commons license and is available from Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org.